Welcome to the Future of Energy, where we'll meet the people who are working with the products of tomorrow. In each episode, we'll take you a step further into the world of electrification, from the roads we travel on, to the vessels that navigate our oceans, and even the skies above. We'll unravel the threads of innovation weaving together the clean energy future. So fasten your seatbelts as we navigate the future of energy, one conversation at a time. Welcome back to the Future of Energy. I'm your host, Anna Lee, and with me in the studio today, we have our very first external guest, Gustav Hasselskog. He's the CEO and founder of Candela Electric Boats. Welcome to the studio, Gustav.
Thank you, Anna Lee.
To those who haven't heard about Candela, would you like to describe what Candela does and your mission?
Yeah, sure. So Candela is all about trying to electrify boats and passenger vessels. And we do that by using hydrofoils. The core problem with electric boats in general is that they need a lot of energy. And batteries, even the best batteries on the market, like Northvolt batteries, contain pretty small amounts of energy compared to gasoline. And then if you have a vessel like a boat that needs a lot of energy, you don't get a very much of a range. So that's the core problem that we try to solve. And then we use hydrofoils, which are simply wings that are put underneath the water surface and then lift the entire boat out of the water. And by that, we'll reduce the energy needed with some 80%.
So you'd say a flying boat, almost.
Yes, definitely. No, it is a flying boat.
Yeah.
So that combined then with a lightweight design makes us super efficient. And then you get a boat with both range and speed. And then in addition, you get some benefits in terms of, you know, it's a very silent boat and we create almost no wake as well. So it's pretty flat behind the boat. And that is a problem at many places that you create a lot of wakes. It's disturbing for the for marine life, but also for other boaters and so forth. So that also means that we in some places get permission to run faster, which is super interesting when we start to talk about passenger ferries.
Yeah. What's your background? What were you doing before Candela?
So I studied mainly engineering, but also studied philosophy and politics and some other stuff. And after that, I joined an investment company and worked for different portfolio companies for quite some time, mainly in product development in medical technology. And then I was part of a startup and I did some larger corporations. And the last job I had before starting Candela was a CEO for a chemicals company in the Nordic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so no clear line in my career, really.
What inspired you to start Candela? Was there something that you, was it that you just saw the gap in the market or was it something you'd seen that you thought was, wow, this could actually work?
No, I think, I mean, first of all, I needed to have something to do. So I left this company, this chemical company, and then I said to myself, I'd just turned 40. Maybe it was a bit of a crisis realizing that, okay, is this really what I wanted to do? And then I gave myself quite some time to figure out sort of what I should become when I become a grown up. And a key thing was to find something difficult, sort of intellectually challenging. I think that was the key driver. And then, of course, do something good for the world at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sort of searching in that direction. And then at the time, we had a summer house in the archipelago of Stockholm and a boat, a 25-foot American day cruiser with a big V8 engine in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sometimes we went to a neighboring island to buy ice cream with the kids. And I realized that trip costed like 50 euros.
Wow.
Excluding the ice cream, which was probably like 10 euros or something.
Yeah.
And then the simple calculation I made was like, okay, this boat consumes 15 times more fuel per kilometer than the car we had.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the time Tesla started to come along. And the sort of the electrification had started in society in general, but nothing had really been done on boats. And I think the key reason was, I mean, several reasons, but one is, of course, the fact that you need a lot of energy to push these boats forward and batteries are heavy and also expensive. So there was really no solution in sight.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
So a boat trip inspired you to...
Yeah.
I remember those boat trips as a kid getting some ice cream.
Yeah.
So what goes into electrifying a boat? Like what goes behind the design and the team and what do you need to gather to come up with this sort of idea? And not just that, but the boats itself that you've designed.
Yeah. So when I started Candela, I realized that if we're going to do this type of flying boat, we cannot buy very much of the stuff that normal boat builders buy. So we had to do a lot of stuff in-house. So essentially all of the high-tech stuff we had to build from scratch. So that's what we have done. And that includes then of course, the drivetrain with the pod motor that we have developed. But it also includes the entire foil system, which are the wings and the struts and the rudders and so forth. But even more so, the control system for the foil system. Because the foil system is, or the whole boat is inherently unstable. So it doesn't want to stay up there. And to achieve stability, we need electronics. So a lot of sensors, computer programs, and then actuators that constantly change the so-called angle of attack of the wings, meaning sort of how much lift you create in the wings. So it turned out to be a fairly complex project, which was probably a key reason for kicking it off. I really sort of personally needed an intellectual challenge. And this was a challenge of sort. I don't think I really sort of fully understood how complex it would be. Mm-hmm. First of all, the complexity of the technology in itself and to get that to work, not only for 10 minutes, but sort of day in and day out to get the robustness needed. And then, of course, to set up production, the fundraising, to fund the customers and so forth. So it has been quite a journey. We celebrate the 10th anniversary of the company this year.
Wow.
We're still around despite up and downs in the financial markets, but it has been rewarding really to do this, to build a company from scratch. And we are now sort of 220 people in the company, very passionate about technology and the ambition to change the world and being sort of a leader in this field. That's of course fun.
Yeah. So now when Candela has different boats, what is the difference in range compared to a gasoline boat? So if you're using fuel or if you're using a battery?
Yeah, so the boats we have now, they do a bit more than 50 nautical miles, around 55 nautical miles, the C8, which is our second leisure boat. I think it's kind of comparable to a combustion engine boat. It's a bit less. It's a bit like an electric car.
Yeah.
And that with sort of a normal modern combustion engine, you get a bit further today with a combustion engine car than you get with an electric car. So it's kind of similar there, but the range is good enough. I mean, you can do boating for almost like 3 hours in 20 knots, which is pretty good. And you also use boats kind of differently compared to how you use a car. I mean, you don't say that. You don't have to go to Gothenburg, you know. Rather, you go for a swim trip or whatever. So the distances tend to be shorter. Mm-hmm. So that's not a big problem. Yeah, and compared to other electrical boats, we usually say that we have roughly half the battery size and roughly three times their range. Mm-hmm. So a big difference there.
Yeah.
Which also means that charging is, of course, less of a problem. If you have a smaller battery, you don't have to spend too much time charging, and you don't need very much of a special infrastructure for that.
Yeah.
You can use your household outlet and it works pretty fine.
Oh, okay. What do you see the future looking like for electric boating? Then I'm thinking also charging solutions and grids. So like you said, I mean, for a gas or a diesel boat, you have certain stations where you go fuel up, basically where you buy the ice cream. So what do you see that future looking like?
Well, to start with, I think it's much easier to find electricity with a boat than you can find gasoline. Again, in the archipelago of Stockholm, there are not very many gas stations left. So, but you can always find sort of some electricity. So that's fairly easy. And we don't need any sort of special infrastructure. And most marinas and boat clubs, they have the electricity needed. And then you charge over, a couple of hours. I think fully charged, the boat we have now with 16 amp, three-phase outlet, it takes you like 3-4 hours. So it's not a big thing, really. And then, of course, fast charging is good, but it's not needed. So the fast charging topic is more of a topic, I would say, for passenger ferries, where you want to utilize the assets you have as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. So when did that start in marinas? When did they start building charging infrastructures?
Well, it hasn't. I mean, in some places it has started. I think Norway do a lot of stuff there. There is some project ongoing on the West Coast and so forth. But marinas and boat clubs, they've had electricity for ages. So that's nothing new.
Yeah.
And most boats want to have a normal cable just to charge their lead batteries to keep them alive.
Yeah, exactly.
So it has been around for a while, and that's typically enough.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about people who are sort of second guessing the whole thing of, I mean, it's the same as people who second guess an electric car.
Yeah.
What happens when you run out of juice, yeah. out of energy?
Yeah.
But it's the same. What if you run out of gas? Yeah. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
So you already went into it as well, but could you share a little bit of insights, especially with Candela's boats, what the sort of environmental impact compared to a combustible boat is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the first thing is the fact that we reduced the energy needed quite a lot, so roughly 80%. So even if the electricity generation is fully fossil-based, it's still a good idea. Because I think if you do electricity based on fossil and then you charge an electric boat with that, the gains are obviously not very large. And today, on a global scale, roughly 66% of the electricity production is still fossil-based. And I think we are around 50% in Europe. So that has to be considered. So energy saving is a key topic, I think, to start with. And then sort of when you have fossil-free energy production, then, of course, if you use then electric drivetrain, then it's a very good thing, and you get zero emissions at the end.
But the reduced emissions for these boats is one factor.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have another very interesting, and it goes back to the fact that there's less resistance and mm-hmm. weight, but it's the noise pollution as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So
there's almost no noise, and when I go alone in the boat, I typically play Chopin in the loudspeakers. Which you can't really do in a normal boat because it's so noisy.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's a bit wavy that day when you're out running, in a normal boat, it gets very slammy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you get rid of that. So it's a very gentle ride and very different from running a normal combustion engine planing boat.
Yeah.
And once you've started with that, it's hard to go back because it feels like, it doesn't feel like the right sort of direction of development, mm-hmm. really.
I said that when I was on the boat this summer. I said it's going to be hard to go back into a normal gasoline boat because it's just, I would say it's not only just the sound, but it's also the feel when once you're up with the foils.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a different, like you said, you're not worried about the waves or the wake or anything like that.
Right.
So it's...
And then in a normal boat, you typically have to spend quite some energy on trimming the boat to have it
right.
sort of the pitch right in the water.
Mm-hmm.
The roll of the boat should be the right. And if somebody's moving, you need to push some buttons mm-hmm. to change that and so forth. So that is all taken care of by the computer system.
I was going to say, I can imagine that that's been a challenge, mm-hmm. just sort of figuring that balance out too. Like you said, balancing a boat.
Yeah.
It is literally sort of flying. So you need to make sure that when there are big waves that come, that the system right reacts in the right way. Has that been a challenge?
Yes, for sure. And a normal airplane is sort of, it's stable in itself. So, and that's why you could build airplanes without any electronics, 100 years ago already, mm-hmm. or before that. But this type of boat here, you have the wings far down in the water, and then you have the mass of the boat on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes like a rod you try to balance in your palm. And that can be hard enough when you have flat water to figure out how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you get into waves, it gets, of course, much trickier. And
mm-hmm.
then if you throw in some turning into that, so you want to lean the boat inside mm-hmm. the turn, and then you hit some big waves, you have to figure out sort of how to deal with that. So, and that was the intellectual challenge that I looked for. So
mm-hmm.
it has been super fun. And we started off with a fairly traditional control algorithm.
Yeah.
And now it has gotten fairly advanced, where we use some sort of modern techniques
mm-hmm.
to control the boat in space. So
it's
super fun and it works. So you get a very different and much nicer experience,
mm-hmm.
and also much more responsive experience. So it's very similar to a fighter jet in the sense that those are also nowadays unstable, and then you can benefit from that in creating more of a responsive feel. So whenever you turn, when you just move the steering wheel a bit,
mm-hmm.
the boat starts to sort of kick into the turn very fast.
So it's flexible, more flexible with maneuvers and so on.
And we can tune that in the software, mm-hmm. how we sort of want the experience to be, which is pretty amazing. Yeah, and then we have the wake generation, which is the lack thereof, which is, of course, a fantastic thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the first stretch we're going to run with the passenger ferry starting this summer from the city hall in Stockholm out to a suburb called Ekerö outside Stockholm. There we have gotten permission to run faster than all other boats because we make no wake. And then we cut the commuting time in half.
Mm-hmm.
So compared to the current boat, or compared to if you go by bus and or in subway or by car. So that means a lot, of course, for people. We're going from 50, 55 minutes to 25 minutes per trip. So a round trip per day for a commuter, I mean, you save almost an hour, mm-hmm. which is, you can, be with your kids or whatever you want to do.
Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about this passenger ferry that you announced a few years ago that now...
Yeah.
It was super exciting seeing it out in the water. It was incredible, especially seeing it dock into, was it in Yugodan? Where it docked into.
Yeah, it could have been, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And seeing, you know, a person come out with a bike. Oh, and, yeah.
No, and that has been sort of a project that we started off, I think, is it now 4 years ago?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it has been in the making for a while. It required a bit more funding to kick that off. It's a different beast compared to a leisure boat in many ways, especially regulatory-wise. So mm-hmm. there are more legislations that we need to relate to and so forth.
Yeah.
But then also technology-wise, it's bigger and everything needs to be more robust and safe and so forth. So mm-hmm. quite a lot of efforts went into it. But now we're there. So we put the first boat in water in September last year mm-hmm. and it flew beautifully. It took us, you know, an hour or so, just running slowly. And then we just hit the throttle and off she went mm-hmm. up in the air, which was a... amazing thing to see after sort of so much hard work to see it's working. And now we have a lot of demand around the world for that boat.
I was going to say, for those who are listening who live in a smaller city or know of smaller ferries, what's the difference between this ferry and a normal, you know, Yugodan feria?
Yeah, so it's a passenger ferry for 30 passengers mm-hmm. and it can run in 30 knots. So it's a pretty fast boat. We opted for a catamaran hull, and that's mainly to have a low consumption also at low speed. Mm-hmm. So you can run it sort of efficiently, although you're not on the foils up mm-hmm. and flying. And the reasons for the kind of smaller format, because ferries are typically a bit larger. In most cities, they are either like 150 passengers, or in Stockholm, they tend to be like 300 passenger ferries. And the background to that was that we started to run numbers on several cities, but mainly in Stockholm. And then we saw that the utilization, the seat utilization of ferries is extremely low. In no city we have seen you get above 20%. So they run empty. And key reason for that is that the ferries are simply too big. So you get a very sort of inflexible system. And then we also saw that when we looked into the legislation, that if you have only 30 passengers, then you need only one staff on board. And mm-hmm. staff cost is a major part of the total operational cost for a ferry operator. So trying to optimize that whole thing, we found that, okay, let's go for 30 passengers, because mm-hmm. then you can have a much more flexible system. You can have the number of routes per day you can do increases massively, of course. So the service for the citizens increase a lot. You get a higher seat utilization, and you can still have fairly low staffing cost. And this is made possible very much by the physics of a foiling boat. So a traditional hull, it's good to make it large if you want to have a low consumption per seat. So that, I think, has been the driving force for these large formats that you see. But mm-hmm. with the hydrofoil boat, that's not the case. So we can choose kind of freely. And then we found that sweet spot, and that's what we went for. So in basically every place we go and run the numbers together with operators, we see cost reductions of at least 30%, often it is more than that.
Wow.
So now we can go out and say, we can save you at least 20%, mm-hmm. and we are prepared to sort of give you a fixed price on that, including service and everything.
Yeah.
And that is, of course, helpful in sales.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's super exciting. I can't wait to see that out in out in Stockholm in the summer. So just going back to the technology of the boat, and one last thing that I just want to pick your mind about is, why did you choose hydrofoils? How did that come? I mean, I know that you said that when you were thinking about how much a normal boat was consuming, and how could you, with the electric boat, even do an even better job at mm-hmm. like cutting the energy?
Yeah.
How did that come about? Was it?
Well, that was after this ice cream trip. I started looking into what can you do to reduce the energy needed, because mm-hmm. the first realization was that, okay, this will not work with the traditional boat and with batteries.
Yeah.
And then I found that the traditional hulls are kind of, they're pushed as far as you can get in terms of efficiency already. Sort of the knowledge is there. You can't do much there.
Mm-hmm.
You can reduce the weight. That's one thing. But except for that, you can't do much. And then there is this a bit odd technology of hydrofoils, which was invented at the end of the 19th century. So it's soon 150 years old.
Huh.
And there was a guy, he wanted to build an airplane, a Brit, And then he built that airplane in bamboo. To avoid risking his own life by testing different wing profiles, he thought, okay, maybe I can try these wing profiles in water.
Mm-hmm.
So he put horse close to a river, and then he had sort of these wing profiles in the water, and he pulled out the horse. And that sort of was the invention of the hydrofoil.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the beginning of 1900, it was mainly an Italian guy, Forlini, that started to experiment in Lago di Maggiore. And then Alexander Graham Bell built a boat in 1919, which did more than 60 knots, which is just insane.
Yeah.
He got a Rolls-Royce aircraft engine mounted on it. And that one was also in bamboo. And then this technology didn't really take off. The Americans and the Russians used it a bit during the 50s and 60s. So there were quite some efforts put into the technology at the time. But then it's more complex. And the need for energy efficiency was not there.
No.
Energy was cheap. Climate change didn't exist and so forth. So it was a good timing to pick it up again, because it's drastically more efficient. So it was the perfect thing. And then again, for me, it was the perfect intellectual challenge as well. Because
making it work.
Yes. And it has been freaking hard.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about the EV market. So the electric vehicle market, that has just boomed in the past 10 plus years.
Yeah.
And you went back, obviously, talking about how, you know, Tesla was booming, and that also the idea of like, so how do we do this?
Yeah.
Where do you see the electric boating market going? Do you think that there is a break coming soon? What is in your ideal future? What does that look like?
Well, I think a key difference, compare the boat market with the car market.
I mean
we have talked about the difference in energy being sort of one of the challenges there. Another structural difference is that the boat industry is kind of a catalog business.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy all you need to build a boat from a catalog. You can buy the engine, you can buy the navigation system, the navigation lights, the pumps, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not possible if you want to build a combustion engine car, because it's very difficult to build a combustion engine and a transmission and so forth. So you have a lot of consolidation in the market, and they're more integrated. So the boating industry, if you can build a hull in your garage, you can put stuff together from a catalog, and then you have a boat, which means that the market is very fragmented,
mm-hmm.
with very low entry barriers. Nobody is kind of making money in that industry.
Yeah.
And the boat builders as such are very low tech. So To achieve change in that industry is harder then, because mm-hmm. you don't have these sort of big giants that have deep pockets making money on the stuff they do today.
Yeah.
With a lot of engineers that needs to do something new.
Yeah.
And then also you need to build a very different type of vehicle altogether.
Mm-hmm.
An electric car is, after all, a car where you swap the drivetrain.
Mm-hmm.
But the stuff we're doing is you need to build a completely different vehicle. So
so
you end up with kind of changing, we think, the nature of the industry, in that mm-hmm. you need to build this sort of integrated package with all the electronics and all the technology and all the things we have developed. And we have, I mean, Candela, we have, I think, more engineers than all of the big boat builders in the world together.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And I've been to your office. It's not that big. So that's just like, you can imagine the amount of knowledge in that room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which also then makes the industry more interesting from an investor perspective, mm-hmm. because then you have
open doors to a different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you create something that it's harder to replicate. And there is more sort of economy of scale to be made by the boat builder. So the one that can really figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Can also have a bright future.
Yeah. Because like you said, if you are making an electric boat and you do it in the more traditional sense of what a combustible boat would be, then the efficiency of that boat is quite low, given that, you know, you have a lot of wake and a lot of water resistance.
Yeah. Wow. No, so that is, of course, there are companies that build now electric drivetrains that can be installed in traditional boats. But the problem is still the same as when I started Candela, that you don't get far enough, and then you can load it with more batteries. But at the end, you get to a physical limit where the boat sinks at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So at the marginal value, more batteries gets to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to get around unless the batteries get drastically more energy dense.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, we see improvements there, but but it's not, there's no stepwise change that I know about that will happen in the near future there.
Yeah, very interesting. So given that you're already in this sphere, what kind of role do you think electric boats will have in the transportation industry? And this could be for tourism or inner city. Now that you guys have already sort of entered that market, where do you see Stockholm in 20 years?
Yeah, so we it's obvious that we need to move to non-fossil fuel-based solutions. And then electricity is and using batteries is way more attractive than using hydrogen, which is sort of the key alternative today, both from a cost perspective, but even more so from an environmental perspective. Their hydrogen is pretty bad. So I think you're going to see battery-powered vessels. And now the use of hydrofoils is sort of the only way for a bit longer distances. You can always go close to the city and so on, and short trips and so on, and charge every 5 minutes or whatever. But for a bit more distance, I think you're going to see hydrofoil boats. And our vision there is, you know, we talked about the bit smaller format already, the fact that we can increase the speed because we don't make any wake and so forth. Another piece here that we're working on is to, if you go from many or from a few big vessels to many smaller vessels, that also opens up for ditching the timetables and going for an on-demand setup. Yeah. So that would be kind of an Uber in a public transportation kind of style.
Yeah.
So you would simply say, I want to go from here and there at this time point. And then we would have a central computer that routes all these ferries in real time and tries to optimize the whole thing. That would drastically improve the service, of course. Then you can go where you want, whenever you want. And it will also lower the cost because the utilization of the vessels can be further pushed upwards. Fixed timetables are, of course, bad in terms of optimizing for utilization.
Yeah.
But with such a setup, you can get up to very high numbers and thereby lower the cost. And so it's great for the taxpayers and for the citizens.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a really awesome future in Stockholm. Okay, I just have a last question for you. We did a fun project in August where we did the world record of the C8, and it was the longest distance in 24 hours. What were your sort of key takeaways and learnings from that experiment and that like project itself?
I think, I mean, first, that it can be done, that you can have kind of a 3-to-1 running versus charging ratio, which means that the charging in itself doesn't become a big burden. This is mainly for us relevant in the public transportation passenger ferry setting, where using the assets as much as possible is a key thing, and then charging can be seen as just idling. But typically they have, you know, peaks in the morning and in the afternoon, so they can charge during lunchtime anyway. But I think it showed that charging is not a big topic, and it doesn't sort of constitute a big disadvantage for electric vessels. Yeah, that's probably the key lesson. And the other one probably is around costs here. So we did some calculations what it would cost to build a full network to run from Stockholm to Helsinki. And the numbers there are just super, super small. I mean, we would need 10 of those charging stations. And so the infrastructure piece here is cheap compared to all other type of infrastructure projects you can consider.
Because these were battery system packs that would then be connected to a charging port. And then, of course, from there, you charge the boat.
Exactly.
And those having those out in the archipelago, like you said, would be an easy step process.
Yeah. No, I think exactly. So the beauty of the setup we did together with Northvolt is that you can have a fairly sort of thin cable available when you start. And then you use a big battery pack to store energy, and then a vessel comes in and then you charge it very fast. So then you combine the cost efficiency of not having to run, you know, massive amounts of copper cables, hundreds of kilometers with fast charging, and that's what you want. So I think for a lot of places, that is a great solution. And then, of course, if you're close to a fat cable, you run it directly,
but
you can have that hybrid approach, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it was really cool to be a part of. Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to tell the audience?
Oh, I think we covered most of it.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay, thank you so much for joining me in the studio, Gustav. It was an honor having you here.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.